The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors. Support for the Economic Club of Indiana is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025. Focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today's presentation is by Dr. Lewis Farabee, Indianapolis Public School Superintendent.
Every person in this room today, as well as every person who lives in our county, has a direct and important stake in the success of our schools, and particularly the success of the Indianapolis Public School System. The future of our children is inexplicably linked with their access to a quality education and the economic, civic, and cultural development of our city and region are dependent on the vitality of our schools. And no school system is more critical to our city's future than the Indianapolis Public School System. IPS is our state's largest school system. Our speaker today, Dr. Lewis Farabee, was appointed as IPS superintendent in 2013. Prior to joining IPS, Dr. Farabee was the chief of staff at the Durham, North Carolina public school system. Under Dr. Farabee's leadership in Durham, test scores rose, graduation rates increased to 80%, and the number of schools that the state designated as low performing decreased to zero. Dr. Farabee is a reformer. He has been aggressive in introducing bold and innovative initiatives to IPS. You will hear about those initiatives today, and they are already yielding positive results for our children. Dr. Farabee is a graduate of North Carolina Central University, earned a master's degree in school administration from George Washington University, and a doctorate from East Carolina University. And on a personal note, my daughter attended IPS, and so I'm personally grateful for the great work of Dr. Farabee and the Indianapolis Public School System. Will you please welcome the superintendent of the school system, Dr. Lewis Farabee.
It is truly an honor and pleasure to be with you today, to be invited to speak to this group. Had an opportunity to be a participant in the audience, but never thought I had an opportunity to address the group. So again, thank you. As mentioned earlier, I'm well aware that this group is attuned to social media. So I want you to know I'm about 180 followers away from 5,000 followers. So the challenge for you today is by the end of this session, I need to be at 5,000, okay? So whatever you need to do to make that happen, please do so. But again, seriously, it's an honor to be before you. Before I get into the message today, I must tell you that I am a member of a rock star team. That you are very fortunate to have representing you an amazing group of individuals on our Board of School Commissioners. What you'll hear today, the plans, the progress, and even the challenges are all being addressed by our Board of School Commissioners. So at this time, I would just ask that we have commissioners here today to please stand, and the audience, please help me recognize our amazing leaders. We have great leaders in the back. We have Diane Arnold, Marianne Sullivan, Sam Odle, Kelly Bentley. I mean, we just have an amazing group of leaders who are supporting me in the district. As I was preparing for today, I was thinking what would be the best way to tell our story about IPS. And I always like to begin with telling my story as a school leader. And you know, people always tell the group about your educational background, but what I'm most proud of is I am a member of the family business. And I want everyone to know that because I am a proud member of my parents were first-generation college graduates who became educators and who were elated about being educators. And like you in the room today, much of what I learned about life and work, I learned from my parents. And one of the things they charged me with is this idea of pursuing education is that you would be committed to standing in the gaps for students who need more. And so that is why I am so proud to serve Indianapolis Public Schools, because it's truly an amazing opportunity to stand in the gap for students who need more. And I won't bore you today about a bunch of statistics that you may be wanting to hear or you may think you're going to hear today. I'm not going to bore you with graduation data and tell you that IPS has one of the highest graduation rates we ever had. I won't share that with you. I won't bore you with statistics about the number of students that enrolled in the district, our poverty rate, our special education. What I will share with you today is a story about transformation. IPS is in a very interesting position because we are changing the landscape of education in this community. As you all know, we all will benefit in this room as we progress in IPS. So to do that, I decided to highlight some headlines. And throughout today, as we share the story of IPS, you'll get a sense of this theme of then and now. So the headlines before you are the headlines prior to 2013 and my arrival. Very interesting headlines. One of my favorites, Program to Fail, IPS, next superintendent. IPS makes a boneheaded decision slashing principal salaries. Fake budget deficits. You want to Google these headlines? They're real. I'm not making them up. Let's go to now. These are some of the headlines now as it relates to IPS, and that's why I'm so excited about where we are as we tell our story of transformation. Superintendent, listening and learning. Ranking number one for his teacher attendance. Non-traditional way of thinking about how we will educate our children. IPS, yes, IPS, leading the way in new approaches of how education could be done, potentially statewide. Dynamic emerges in the district in terms of educating our students on IPS. These are the headlines of today. You like these better? I like them better. We branded ourselves as My IPS Intentionally, because we believe whether you have a student in our district or not, whether you're a member of Team IPS or not, you all have a vested interest in our success. And this website is myips.org. Special note that there is a link to opportunities to join Team IPS. We're going to talk about how we're bringing talent to the district. But here we are today, fresh and bold new view, fresh and bold look. How do we get there? How do we continue our path of progress? How do we ensure that every child in Indianapolis Public Schools realizes a year's growth annually? We believe we have the plan to do that. Very fortunate, this past fall, the work of the Board of School Commissioners in our community, we adopted a very bold and ambitious strategic plan. This plan, we believe, over the next 3 years will take us to places we have never been before. Gives us an opportunity to rethink how we provide education in our community. Rethink how we're partners in our community. And so we're going to build on some of the ideas that you saw before, in addition to providing a fresh fruit and vegetable for every child at no cost, breakfast and lunch for every child at no cost. We're going to continue to extend ourselves to greater heights. And by doing so, I'll also provide an opportunity for you today to think about how you can be a part of this transformation. It's one of my quotes that frame the work around our strategic plan. I truly believe that this is our economic blueprint for prosperity. Creating an opportunity for young people to be either enlisted, enrolled, or employed when they leave us. Ensuring that every young person that leaves us has a plan to be a productive citizen, to be able to contribute back to IPS in our nation. In this strategic plan, there are four cornerstones, one being autonomy and accountability. One of the things I heard loudly and clearly from our principals in our community and my listening tour is that our central administration was a barrier to the progress in the district, that teachers and leaders felt stifled by our numerous mandates and prescriptive direction on how schooling should be done. We changed our way of thinking to ensure that we are giving our school leaders the agility, the flexibility, the autonomy to make informed decisions about their programming, their services to our students and our families. We believe that our teachers and our administrators have the local context. They know their neighborhood, they know their community, and should be able to build instructional programs around it. We believe that teachers in the classroom need the ability to innovate, to be creative, to come to the classroom with their own thoughts and ideas. Doing so, we also want to hold our school leaders and our teachers accountable for that work. But not just accountable by ISTEP or our accountability model with the Indiana Department of Education, but begin to think about new ways that we can chart progress and monitor the performance of our school. But I will tell you that we have a plan to be more efficient with the resources that we do have. And we're going to streamline all of our business practices to maximize every dollar that we have to ensure that all of the resources that are needed in the classroom are there. All the resources are needed for our educators. Again, I won't bore you with statistics like our investment in compensation. The IPS over a three-year period will invest over $20 million in teacher compensation. That's huge. Yes, that's huge. And that is huge because IPS employees had gone years without any type of compensation adjustment. So we want to ensure that we're competitive and able to attract and retain the best educators and staff members in our school. And leadership, we need leaders to follow through on that autonomy. We need leaders to be innovative and creative. We need to ensure that we have avenues for talent development. We have opportunities, for example, to partner with my friend at Marion University, Dr. Elsner, to create a pipeline of educators that focus on urban education that's focused on IPS. We have an opportunity to have our footprint on school leaders that are being developed to lead our schools in new ways. And then finally, we are very aggressive in creating what we call a storefront of services for families. We know that when the family is well, students have the opportunity to be as successful as possible. This is the optimal learning situation when our families are supported in the best ways possible. How was this plan developed? It was developed through our stakeholders, our community, our constituents. My first 90 days of my entry plan was extremely focused on listening to the voices of our students and our families and our community to get a better understanding of what we're doing well and what our opportunities are for improvement. Had an opportunity to collect over 6,000 voices through focus groups, town hall meetings, surveys, every means that we could take advantage of. We even had a Twitter chat for those tweeters who are working on my 5,000 followers. We wanted to take advantage of every avenue possible. I even reprised my role as a teacher to go into our elementary and secondary schools. Our strategic plan will be a living, breathing document, though. It will be very dynamic. And so we understand that what's in our plan today will evolve and change as the district continues to grow and progress. Work hard to build ownership, not buy-in, but ownership across all sectors to ensure that those that are part of the plan know that they own it and they're responsible for implementation. So our Board of School Commissioners started to work through their development of our core commitments and belief. The administration then took that out to our community, to our employees, our students, and our families. And we, again, created what we believe is a widespread engagement to build ownership. We want to continue to ensure that we're empowering our families with the appropriate advocacy. We have in every school, almost every school, a parent involvement educator whose primary focus is to ensure that the school is a liaison between the family and the community, and that's their sole responsibility. Again, we want to continue to be good partners and leverage all of the resources in our community. One thing I've learned about Indianapolis is when we decide to do something, we do it really well. There are lots of people who are interested in supporting IPS. I'm going to talk a little bit in a few minutes about how you can continue to support IPS. So where are we now with our strategic plan? We're in implementation. We're now inviting those individuals that are part of the development process and those individuals that we're watching from the sideline that are interested now and believe they have talents and skills and can make a contribution to this plan, we want to bring them back into the fold. And so what we're doing now is breaking all of our strategies down into work plans. And we're going to establish charter teams as part of these work plans that will be responsible for implementation. As I said earlier, as we implement, we'll continue to monitor and adjust on a cycle of continuous improvement to ensure that as we experience challenges or barriers, we're able to recalculate appropriately, but stay focused, remain focused on ensuring that our students receive a quality education to ensure that every young person, when they leave us, are what? Enlisted, enrolled, or employed. Opportunities for you to invest in IPS. I know you've been waiting for this opportunity. What can I do? What can I do? This is just a flavor. This is just a sample of opportunities for you to be a part of the transformation process in IPS. One is our strategic plan. As I said earlier, we've got to all call out now for individuals. If you have expertise in finance, we want you to help us to ensure that we are incorporating business practices appropriately. We're very fortunate to have a finance committee that will need support as we continue to develop strong financial plans for the district. But there are all types of opportunities across our strategic plan for you to get involved and you to be engaged in implementation. Part of this plan is establishing an Office of Advancement. This is another opportunity for those that are interested in providing resources to the district. All of that work will be coordinated through the IPS Education Foundation and the IPS Office of Advancement. We want to ensure that it's easy for you to make investments in IPS and to leverage your talents and your resources. Another opportunity is Read Up. IPS is partnered with the United Way of Central Indiana to provide volunteers who can go into our elementary schools and be readers with young people. This is also an opportunity for adults in our community to be volunteers, but also be mentors. And so if you're not interested in elementary school, we have a similar model at a high school level, Elevate Indy, which also provides opportunities for mentorship. I emphasize this because one thing we know for sure about the young people that we support, that a primary resiliency factor in whether or not our students will be successful is having a meaningful relationship with an adult outside of the home. Now, I know that resonated well with those of you that have children, because there always becomes a time when whatever you say, the young person in your house wants to do the opposite. But it is that mentor, either it's the Girl Scout leader, the Boy Scout leader, the coach, the Sunday school teacher, it is that relationship with that adult outside of the home that often makes the difference. It is the voice that our young people will listen to when they won't adhere to the guidance at home. So I encourage you to be, or consider to be, a mentor to a young person to ensure that they have an opportunity to know that there's someone in our community that has vested interest in their success and who cares about them. One thing I know for sure, when our young people firmly believe that there's a caring adult in their life, they work really hard to please that caring adult. The next sample that I'm really excited about is JobSpark. I challenge our business alliance to develop a plan to ensure that we address teen employment, opportunities for our young people to get a better understanding of what's available to them in the workforce. I go to lots of meetings with business leaders, and two themes that I often hear I believe that we can address. And that is, we need diversity, Dr. Fairby, in our organization. We need young talent in our organization. Well, I promise you, a lot of that talent is right here in your city, is right here in IPS. And one of the things that I learned from my listening tour is that many of our young people are working already. Two examples, an opportunity to have a dinner with all of our salutatorians and valedictorians each year. And we talk about their success and their progress. And I will tell you that almost every person in that room we had a dinner is already working. That two of our salutatorians and valedictorians not only have one job, but have two. Talking about young people that are working 80 hours a week and still find the time to be successful in their academics. When I went into our high schools and I asked our young people to raise their hand if they have a job, I promise you at least 60% of the hands go up. So our young people want to work, but we also need to make sure that they have a full sense of the spectrum of what's available to them. Because right now they're in service level, entry level jobs, which is fine. I explained to the group that I bag groceries as well. Nothing wrong with working at Marsh. But we also want them to be exposed to all the opportunities available to them. And our young people aren't working for a new pair of Air Jordans. They're working to be a contributor in the household, to ensure that there's a roof, there's food on the table, and the necessities are being met at the home. So after I shared that with the Business Alliance for IPS, I challenged the group to begin thinking about how we can create exposure experience for the young people to see what's available to them in the workforce and to develop them into the careers that they may be interested in or available into the community. Because like many urban cities, Indianapolis is a tale of two cities. There are children in Butler, Tarkington, Irvington, Meridian, Kessler, who know exactly what's going on in Circle Center and Chase Tower right now. But there's another group of young people in our city where the Chase Tower is just a tall building that they see over the interstate. And they have no idea what's going on in our city every day. They have no idea of the opportunities that are available to them. And so we have an obligation to expose them to what's available. Because I promise you, when young people have hope, they're fearless. But when they don't have hope, it becomes a challenge. Because they don't see themselves in the seat for tomorrow. They don't have a vision for what they want to become. And so JobSpark is a great opportunity, and we're partnered with Junior Achievement. And so if you're interested, write down Junior Achievement. I will leave you with some leadership lessons. Many of you in the room are leaders, and as you've heard, we have a bold, ambitious plan, and we've taken great steps to improve outcomes. But it's come at a cost. And so many of you in the room today, as you think about innovation, I encourage you to think about creating meaningful innovation, meaningful outcomes, what it takes to get people to the promised land, how to create something that's compelling and creative. Have an understanding that when you are on the edge of change and innovation, that you know that you're going to meet resistance. But have an understanding and a deep sense of the cadence and the pace of that change and who's ready for it and who's not. Another lesson as it relates to innovation I would encourage you to think about is creating a situation where there's true innovation, because there's nothing more frustrating than creating a vision of a promised land and then when people get there, it doesn't align with what you projected. The last concept is what I call ragged replication. Taking a great idea, a practice, or a strategy and trying to replicate without the understanding that every situation is different and not customizing that replication into the conditions that you're in to lead. So as we think about what's happening in IPS, as we think about innovation and change in our community, I just remind you that nothing is free as it relates to change and innovation. We all know that there's risk, and there's risk and return that we need to consider. We also know that to ensure that there's meaningful innovation, it needs to be sustained. So I encourage you to think about innovation with simplicity and legacy. I was talking with my friend Jim from Goodwill prior to this meeting. We were talking about his retirement. He said, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of is what I left with the people and the culture of the organization. So I challenge you to begin to think about what will be your revolution that you will lead, what will be your legacy. These are just a couple examples of innovation and challenges that I experienced here in IPS in Indianapolis as superintendent. We have a collective bargaining agreement that is very innovative and creative. We're the first school corporation in the nation that has a collective bargaining agreement that allows for additional compensation for teachers to be in leadership roles, to take the best teachers and to extend their reach to other students, but also to develop their peers. Again, had to think through lots of conversation around how we would approach this, ensure that we didn't disenfranchise our employees and our practitioners. School transformation is another area with lots of innovation. We've been very focused on persistently low-performing schools. When I entered the district, we had over 26 schools that were rated as F. We've been able to cut that number in half. We're going to continue to be aggressive with cutting that number down. But interesting enough, as we push the envelope of creating change in those low-performing schools, I've got resistance. And so we must continue to think through how we will be perceived as we create change in those schools and create a new story for those persistently underperforming schools. The last one is our partnership with charter schools and being able to facilitate the development of legislation and Public Law 1321, which is an opportunity for IPS to leverage what's good about traditional public schools and charter public schools to create innovative opportunities and provide choice for families in a different and new way. But we've been battling a conversation about whether or not that should be occurring in our community and what that would be what would that look like. I close as I share lessons from my experience in IPS and leadership innovation with one of my favorite quotes. Our greatest asset and liability is how long we've been in business. People want the benefits of change, but not the discomfort. One of my mentors reminded me a while back that no one likes change but a baby. So it is my hope that you will identify opportunities to invest in IPS. It is my hope that you will join me as a community of leaders to be committed to innovation, despite resistance and barriers that may be in our way, to create a better community for ourselves and our future. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Farabee, and thank you for your extraordinary work. Thank you very much for that wonderful discussion, Dr. Farabee. So for our first question, can you elaborate on the role that charter schools should play in Indianapolis?
So I believe that charter schools and traditional public schools need to be thinking about how we can leverage our resources to both have an impact on student outcomes. And so I believe that charter schools need to be thinking about how they can take advantage of the economies of scales of the service that we provide, such as transportation, food service. I also think that charter schools can now begin thinking about how our facilities can be used to manage charter growth. I also believe that this is an opportunity to rethink how we do public education in the city, where we're focused not on the type of school, but the quality of the school. And I believe that the collaboration between traditional public schools and charter schools will allow us to create a greater focus on quality and not the type of school.
Thank you. How many IPS students have taken advantage of the vouchers to go to private schools, and what are your thoughts about the voucher program and how IPS can compete for students to stay who have voucher opportunities?
So interesting enough, we don't track where our students go if they decide not to enroll or leave. What we do is we monitor the numbers on the students that are enrolled. We're excited that after decades of declining enrollment, we've been able to stabilize enrollment in IPS, but we want to make sure that students get a quality education. And so if they decide to leave us, we don't keep track of where they go, but we have partnerships with private schools that offer vouchers, and we have great partnerships with, for example, the Oaks Academy that's currently in one of our facilities that was previously underutilized, and so I think we can begin to think about those partnerships in a different way. But in terms of vouchers, we don't track them. It's our concern primarily to ensure that parents have the choice and be able to identify the school that they believe will best serve them and their families. I will say, though, that we are having conversation around how we can link our data together so we can do a better job with tracking where students go, because many of the educational institutions in our city have revolving doors as students move in and out. And I think it's incumbent of us to have a better understanding of where the students are going to ensure that the continuum of services follow the students. If you have a special needs child that's in IPS today and another entity tomorrow, we need to be able to be in communication to ensure that those services follow the student.
Thank you. What role has the teachers union played in your reform efforts?
They play lots of different roles. I would say it was an eye-opening process for me. This has been my first experience with collective bargaining. And we've learned how to find common ground. I think the ISTA, and particularly locally in the IEA and IPS, their focus has been protecting the union and protecting their employees. What we've tried to do is find ways that we can continue their intention and aim, but also create new ways of thinking for IPS. And I think their role and my role is really coming to the table and thinking about how we can rethink IPS via compensation, via partnerships, so we're not in a situation where we're just doing the same old. And I think one of the things that they've been helpful with is helping the teachers understand that to do the same old thing the same old way is insanity, to expect different results. And I think what we have is a very excited employee base and a team that is excited about doing something different. And I appreciate the leadership of the teacher union in order to make that happen. We don't always agree, but we have been able to agree on some key issues.
Thank you. How important is kindergarten and pre-K to students' readiness to learn?
Paramount. Early education is so important to the acquisition of early literacy skills. It's the time when the brain is developing the most. And so you think about birth to 2 and 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, there's so much happening in their development that we can be a part of that will help better prepare them for kindergarten. So a quick note about kindergarten is my personal belief, and every time I get an opportunity to talk with legislators, I remind them that I believe that kindergarten should be a requirement for all of the young people in the state of Indiana. We've been pushing for full funding for kindergarten, which we got in the last legislative session, which is exciting. And we were very supportive of the preschool opportunity through the mayor's office for Marion County, and we've been able to dramatically increase our preschool enrollment. We have close to 1,000 4-year-olds currently, and we've been able to increase that number significantly since my arrival, and we'll continue to provide that. What we do know is the students that we've had in our preschool program significantly outperform students that have not participated in our preschool program when we assess them on early literacy skills. And so if we truly want students to be on grade level by 3 and read by 3, it's important to ensure that we have those opportunities. So I'm pleased where we are as a community and how this community has embraced preschool. But I think the next step for us is to go even further down the line to work with expecting mothers, supporting mothers in the early years of development to ensure all those things that need to happen for healthy development takes place.
Thank you. What is the proper balance between standardized testing and accountability and teacher and principal autonomy for student achievement?
Good question. It's the journey with accountability in Indiana has been very interesting. But it's not unique to Indiana. And it's my belief that we can achieve accountability with brevity. That what we've done with the number of hours, the number of days for testing and accountability, I think is going too far. And I don't think you'll meet a teacher that doesn't want to be accountable, a principal that doesn't want to be accountable, but I think it has to be reasonable. So it's my hope that we begin to look at assessments that will give us information that will inform instruction. If you spend hours and days on assessment that doesn't give you information on how to better support that young person to identify what their needs are, then to me, that's a lost opportunity. And so it's my hope that we identify assessments that give us the information that we need, particularly at the high school level. We have students that are taking several assessments. They're also taking an AP course. They're taking the PSAT, the ACT. It's just too much. And so I think we can begin to use some of that information to inform instruction. I don't think we need to assess students every year in the way that we have. And my hope that, again, we can find some balance between brevity and accountability as we think about how we'll do testing in the future.
Thank you. And this will be our last question. What has been the biggest obstacle to the positive change at IPS?
Change itself. I think that, you know, as I said in the closing quote, you know, everyone loves the benefits of change but do not want to go through the discomfort. And I think for IPS, one of those changes that has been the most difficult is we are no longer an adult employment agency. That if you're a part of our team, there are clear expectations for you. We expect excellence of you because you have an amazing responsibility for the young people that we serve and support. And that's been tough because I think there's been the perception, you know, if you can't do anything else, teach. If you can't do anything else, you can go here and work here. And we were loyal to people who had been with IPS for years and for decades, but I don't know that they were the best people for our young people. And that's a difficult conversation to have, and that's a difficult place to be, especially when we are right-sizing our central services team, maximizing every dollar we have. We've got to get the best out of every employee. And that's been a difficult change for us. We'll continue on that path, but I'm excited about where we are and the talent that we have going forward.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Farabee, and thank you for your extraordinary work. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll see you next month.
Join us next month at this time for a speech from Dr. John C. Goodman, president of the Goodman Institute for Public Policy Research. You can find more information online at economicclubofindiana.com. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of WFYI Public Media in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
Support for the Economic Club of Indiana is provided by the Lumina Foundation. With a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025, focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.